Give everybody another few minutes to gather together here. Here. I think John's here, and Barb will be here in a minute. There's John. John.
There. Good evening, all.
Well, good evening to
Hi,
you,
John.
John. Thank you.
Finally got all the buttons pushed.
Good
Oh.
evening.
Let's see how we doing on time. We got about 30 seconds. Hey, Greg. Good evening, buddy.
Hello.
Hi, Gregory.
Hi, Greg. Hey.
Oh, fancy sweater there.
Yeah,
Oh yeah,
it
it's Christmas.
is.
I got
You
a work
festive.
Christmas. I
You
got a
are
work Christmas
ready.
party to go to, and
Yeah.
it's supposed to be an ugly sweater, but I'm way too vain to wear an ugly sweater, so
Oh yeah, that I didn't say that's not an ugly sweater.
No, that's not ugly.
it's a Christmas sweater though, so
That's good. It's good enough.
trying to tell on myself there. I'm like,
Well, it's like
ugly sweater.
the skin horse told the Velveteen Rabbit, "You're never ugly to those who you're only ugly to those who don't understand."
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
So we understand.
We understand.
You're
But it's not an ugly sweater, but we
right.
still understand.
That's right. When we know, we understand. Okay, let's take a minute. Just kind of ground center. Let each one of us open ourselves up to whatever it is we need to learn for this evening, that it will be granted to us. Whether we are totally conscious of that or not, openness, willingness is the key. Let us also, if you choose to send light to all of those beings who might be suffering in our world as well as others. They might find peace wherever they happen to be. That they may know the light has never gone out. And never will. We're going to continue with the theme from last week. That kind of left us in this place of how do you know that you know? And the question itself goes far beyond the intellectual. It goes far beyond what we normally term to be faith. I think the way Paul put it is faith is the energy of that which is not seen. However, it's even more than that. So I guess without rhetorically, we could ask the question, how do I know that I am a divine being? How do I know that I am a divine child of God? How do I know that I am unconditionally loved? I don't expect you to answer that, but that's what we're going to be exploring tonight. So I'd ask each one of us, certainly including myself, and here's where it gets a little bit paradoxical, that we're using the thinking mind to go beyond the thinking mind. In Eastern theology, in Hindu theology, it's called Raja Yoga. The highest form of yoga, unity thinking, unity experience, is using the mind, using the thinking mind to go beyond the thinking mind. So you push the mind as far as it will go, and then you take this leap into what the mind would call the unknown, but it's actually a leap into a deeper form of consciousness. And see, one of the reasons why we're all here, I believe, is because we've all experienced that in some way. Sometimes we call that surrender. That I let go of where I'm at or where I think I'm at into a deeper sense of awareness. I look back at my experience with surrender and addictions. And I got to a point where I knew I could not, I could not keep going the way I was going. I had to take the first step. I didn't have the words for it yet. But I had to take the first step of admitting that I was powerless over alcohol, that my life had become unmanageable. As I said, I didn't have those words at the time. But I did know about surrender. And I also realized that I didn't know what was going to happen after I surrendered. I knew there was something on the other side, but I didn't know what that was. Sometimes we call that a leap of faith. Sometimes we call that blind faith. But then again, it's not really, because there must have been a part of me that was aware that there's something better on the other side. I could not prove that to you. I could not put that in words. But I don't think I would ever, spiritually speaking, I would never have been brought up to that point unless I knew or was able to get to a knowing of what would, a hint of what was knowing on the other side. I think that's why a number of the existential philosophers committed suicide, because they reached a point of surrender, but had no realization or understanding that there was something on the other side of that. The only thing for them on the other side of the surrender was absurdity, and they couldn't live with that. So I feel extremely fortunate. I'm sure you do too. somehow or another, this thing called grace, which is rather undefinable in terms of spirituality, but somehow or another, this thing called grace led me to a belief or an understanding that there was something beyond where I was at, something on the other side of surrender. I didn't know what that was. I didn't even know it was better or worse than what I was going through, but I knew I couldn't keep doing what I was doing. I'm sure some of you have had experiences like that as well, or you wouldn't be here. So let me begin on page 130 towards the bottom. And please, I would ask you if you have anything to add or say, because I'm really, sometimes I feel like I've got it together and sometimes not. I feel like I'm on a trapeze without a net right now. So I might need you to catch me. Okay. On the bottom of page 130. Now, when you know, with a capital K, when you know, you are not questioning. You are not self-deceiving, nor can you deceive another. It is not possible. And the teaching of truth that we have offered you already, truth as a field, as an energy that you begin to operate in. I know who I am in truth, what I am in truth, how I serve in truth, is the support that you will require to ennoble the activation without self-deceit. In the claim, I know who I am, the recognition of knowing claims the form, the physical form, the material form that energy is going to take, claims the form, the what, the manifest self and its expression, commensurate with the value or level of vibration that you have come to, is the service you bring in agreement to know what is required of you. Put very simply, when you take the leap of faith, you know on an intuitive level what's next. This is a little bit of an aside. It's probably obvious that when I read to you and speak from the reading, that this is my interpretation of what the guides are saying. My interpretation. That doesn't mean it's true. Could be because it's probably limited by my own perspective. So I just want to let you know that I'm learning as much as everybody else is. And this is my perspective at the moment. And it's only truth, not with a capital T necessarily. But I recalled when I was reading this, what this paragraph reminded me of was when I was being a therapist. I was wearing the hat of a therapist. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but that was the hat I was wearing. That's the suit I had on. Oh, you can come in and see me. I got my therapist suit on. When I had my therapist suit on, there were any number of times when I would be lovingly working with a client and I would have absolutely no idea where to go next. I wouldn't know what question to ask. I wouldn't know what to focus on. I was just at a loss. Of course, I could have made something up, which I'm pretty good at, but I decided I really didn't want to do that with people. So silently in my own mind, I would say, God, I said, I have no idea where to go. Like Martin said, my Lord God, I have no idea where I'm going. I have no idea what to give this person or how to help this person with whatever dilemma they're struggling with. Please direct me, guide my words, guide my thoughts to something that will be meaningful and helpful to this individual. And it was always there, magically almost. It wasn't a thought, it wasn't an idea, it was like, aha, here's the direction I need to go in. It just happened to be the right words or the right actions at the right time. And I'm sure that happens to you as well. Now, Paul is interrupting. I can imagine many people saying, well, I don't know. You are telling me that I know, but I don't think I do. The guys respond, when you know, with a capital K, there is no thinking. Then it has nothing to do with the degrees up on your wall. There is recognition. There is, ah. And the knowing that we speak to actually bypasses systems of agreement that you have utilized to confirm the old reality. In other words, we're going beyond your thinking mind. We're going beyond what the words, what the book says, or it says in this book. We're going beyond that to a place inside of you that is aware, continually aware of the truth. And if I could be connected, if I could be consciously connected to that all the time, my life would obviously be tremendously different. It's one of the reasons why I enjoy Tuesday evening. I have to be connected as much as I can be. This is not Jerry Boylan talking. Well, it is and it isn't. There is recognition. And the knowing that we speak to actually bypasses systems of agreement that you have utilized to confirm the old reality. Now, if you understand that any equation has an outcome, 2 + 2 = 4, you can also understand that something is conceived of, is always in resonance at the level of its conception. In other words, if it comes from fear, it's going to be a reflection of fear. If it's a reflection of doubt, it's going to be, if it's doubtful, it's going to be a reflection of doubt. If it's loving, it is going to be a reflection of lovingness. If it is an openness to divine guidance, it's the light of God that's going to shine through. In other words, the man who makes the painting claims the identity of the painting in recognition of the consciousness he holds as he paints. One of my favorite artistic endeavors is Picasso's Don Quixote. If you're familiar with that, it's just sort of looks like a bunch of lines just kind of scribbled on a piece of paper, and you look at it more closely. It's just absolutely amazing that he could create an image with such feel, with such power, with such grace out of just a bunch of squiggles on a piece of paper. It's like, how the hell did he do? Well, he did it because he's an artist. He did it because he was united to the source at that particular moment. Can you imagine Beethoven waking up some morning and say, well, I think I'm going to write the Emperor Concerto today? He didn't do that. What he did was he sat in front of his piano with his harpsichord and he plugged into the source of being God or divine grace or divine wisdom or the divine music or whatever you want to call it, and it flowed through him. It flowed through the filter of Beethoven, and because he did that, it was absolutely beautiful. Plugging in, how many times have you done that? How often you may be doing that right now on Tuesday, plugging into the source and say, speak to me. Lord, that I may see, let me listen to your words. Let me listen to the energy of your words to flow to me and through me so that I might heal, so that I might bless, so that I might listen, so that I might be aligned to the truth. And it's got something like that has so much power that painting from Picasso or that piece of music from Beethoven has so much power, so much vitality that it goes beyond the form. It's not just the notes that are being played. It's not just the ink on a piece of paper. It's far beyond that. And what this is asking us to do is, please, can you believe that about yourself? Can you believe that you are an artist? That you are a maestro? That when you allow the power and love and grace of God to flow to you and through you, you bless the whole world. You cannot not bless the whole world. And how unbelievably we still restrain ourselves from saying, oh, that's not me. I'm not good enough. Oh, I couldn't do that. I'm not Beethoven. I'm not Mozart. I'm not Picasso. I know you're not. But you are just as much a form of divine light as they are. And the light shines through you in its own unique way with everybody you touch. Whether you're physically present to it, or whether you're praying for the people in Palestine or Ukraine, you're touching them as well. I mean, what is prayer but the openness to the energy of God and grace to be sent forth to other people to heal and to grow and to change and to transform? And we've all got that power. It's right here. Oh, not me.
Can you read that last part again slowly about the artist?
Yeah. In other words, the man who makes the painting claims the identity of the painting in recognition of the consciousness he holds as he paints. The musician does that. It is so different. I don't want this to be overly self-centered, but it just struck me as being important. I enjoy playing music. I enjoy writing music. I haven't done any writing in a while, but it's sitting on the edge someplace. And there are sometimes when I'm practicing that I'm just practicing. And there are other times when I've been encouraged by a teacher friend of mine. She said, when you're practicing, invite the angels to come in and listen because they want to hear you. Oh. So instead of just practicing a piece of music, like making twos or making threes when you're in grade school, right, she turned it into an act of love. She turned it into recognition of the consciousness he holds that he paints. I'm practicing this piece of music. As opposed to or as compared to, I am a source of love flowing through me and to me, not just so the angels can listen to it, but so they can give it away to somebody else. What would it be like if everything I did was in the recognition of the consciousness that I'm holding in this moment? My favorite thing about Thich Nhat Hanh, when you're doing the dishes. You remember this one? Make sure that the next dish you wash is a little baby Buddha. So it's not just throw it on the dryer, get it done. It's like, oh, this dish is a little baby Buddha. I'm going to treat it so gently and so lovingly, just the way I would like to be treated. What would it be like if everything we approach, putting on my clothes in the morning, taking a shower in the morning, just I'm taking care of my body as I would take care of a little baby Buddha. What would that be like? Oh, I just dry myself off so I can finish this shower so I get on doing whatever it is I need to do today. Instead of making that into an act of love. The painting.
Here.
Can I just get through this paragraph?
Sure.
The painting is the outpicturing of the consciousness at the level of alignment the painter holds. So if I'm just drawing a bunch of lines on a piece of paper, that's going to be the energy behind it. If I am an artist, who's simply a person who is open to divine consciousness, whether they use those words or not, then the thing, then the painting or the picture or the photograph or the piece of music carries with it this energy of divine consciousness. It cannot not carry that. The painting exists without the painter. Doesn't matter who did it, didn't matter why they did it, didn't matter how they did it. I look at that and I go, wow, freaky. That's so beautiful. It may hang in a museum, but it still claims the vibration of the painter at the level of alignment he grew to and was at the time that the painting was conceived of. Walked into the Sistine Chapel years ago, and I was dying to see that mosaic, that picture, that painting, fresco up on the top of the roof where God is reaching out and Adam is reaching out and their hands are just about touching one another. And then all of a sudden I realized that's just one panel in about these 16 panels that make up this part of the ceiling. And it just rolled. I said, my God. And the energy of that has existed for 400 or 500 years and continues. The artist is long dead, maybe even forgotten. And yet the loving energy, the power, the miraculous energy of that statement, that painting is still there to just bowl you over. It claims the vibration of the painter at the level of alignment he grew to and was at the time the painting was conceived of. Wow. Now, what would it be like to know that you have that same power? That's what this is all about. This is not about somebody else. It's about you. Diane, you had something you wanted to say.
Is God our painter? Is God my painter?
The way Teresa of the Little Flower put it is, I am God's paintbrush.
I am God's paintbrush. Okay, right here it says the painting exists without the painter. So it's like the painter isn't necessary. The painting's been done.
The painter was necessary as a channel for a while. But it... the painting itself goes beyond the energy of the painter. Let's put it that way. The energy goes beyond that. So that, you know, a work of what we call a work of art goes far beyond the creator of that composition.
Okay.
It has, in some ways, it has a life of its own.
I just see that it's gone.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
I see that as God. I see that as God.
You can see it any way you like to. It's it's certainly an act of divine creation. As you lift to the upper room, what you claim and how you claim it is in alignment to the higher octave. And what you claim and where you claim it must then move it into accord to the vibration you know yourself in. So the ways of being that you have utilized to confirm a reality, the old equations, this is who I am, this is what I am, this is what I look like, this is my body, this is my past, this is whatever it happens to be. So the ways of being that you have utilized to confirm a reality, the old equations, if you wish, are in fact transposed, renowned in the high octave. Once again, the example, the concerto may be played in a low key or a high key. In the high key, the value of the concerto lifts what it encounters to meet it in resonance or in tone. I see you as a blessing. I see you as the light of the world. I see you. Not only does that raise my vision, but it raises you as well. Now, you might not be conscious of that. It's still there. The acclimation to the high vibration that you have come to commands you to interface with the manifest world for the purpose of recognition or recognizing the divine that you now know is there. I know you. I see you. Mother Teresa was asked, what is the purpose of your life? And she said, to see the Christ in all his distressing disguises. To see beyond the ego, to see beyond the personality. And of course, the only way we can do that is seeing beyond our own ego and our own personality. So she knew. Mother Teresa is just this disguise. It's a very thin disguise that Christ is hiding behind. But it's a necessary piece of working here on planet Earth. So I will accept the disguise that I've chosen to wear this time, right? But at the same time, I will realize that I'm not attached. I'm not attached to my personality. I'm not attached to my ego consciousness. It's not who I am. And because I am not attached to mine, I'm not attached to yours either. So I see through it. I see through whatever disguise you are wearing, whether you're Adolf Hitler or Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. Doesn't matter who it is. I see through that. That's just a disguise. That's just a mask you're wearing. That's just the disguise you chose to be here on planet Earth. It's a tough one. I'm glad it's not mine. But when my prayer is, Lord, that I see beyond that. And whenever I get caught up, which I do quite often, when I get caught up in forgetting to see you as you really are, something will usually happen that will remind, oops, that's not the truth of who they are. Because I realize that I'm seeing through my limited lens. I'm seeing through the lens of my own personality and my own ego consciousness. And that's the way I see you too. And then realize, okay, I don't have to do that. Now, please be aware that that does not erase my feelings all of a sudden. It doesn't make me like you. It doesn't make me like your personality or your ego because I still might not be able to stand that, but I can know that that's not who you are. And it's like, I look at you as being, let's say, one of the greater challenges of my life. Thank you for teaching me. And I will keep showing up in your life until you see me for who I truly am.
Jerry?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. When you're talking about seeing, you know, seeing, we're in just a disguise and seeing who we are or someone else truly is, reminds me of this little writing by Thich Nhat Hanh. How can we love our enemy? He was talking about how do we love our enemy? The only way is to understand him, to understand how he has come to be the way he is, to see him. In fact, to love our enemy is impossible because the moment we understand him and we feel compassion toward him, and see who he truly is.
He's not my enemy.
No longer our enemy.
That's great. Read that again.
That's pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Can you read that again?
Even if our enemy is cruel, even if he is crushing us, sowing terror and injustice, we have to love him. This is the message of Jesus. How can we love our enemy? The only way is to understand him, to understand how he has come to be the way he is, to truly see who he truly is. In fact, to love our enemy is impossible because the moment we understand him, we feel compassion toward him, and he is no longer our enemy.
That's beautiful.
It is.
Can I
it
share
really
another
takes meditating on?
Yeah.
Contemplating that.
I came across this too. I'd like you to send that along to me and I can make sure
Okay.
everybody else gets it.
Okay.
This is a quote from Thomas Merton. The beginning of love is the will to let those we love be perfectly themselves.
Ah, yes.
The resolution not to twist them to fit our own image. If in loving them we do not love what they are, but only their potential likeness to ourselves, then we do not love them. We only love a reflection of ourselves we find them in.
That's good. That's powerful. I'd like to have that one.
I will certainly send that along.
Yeah.
Hey, Jerry.
Thanks for that, Paula. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's up, Jim?
Yeah. So, wow. I often think to myself, well, a lot I think to myself, but specifically.
You're right, Jim. We do. We think to ourselves.
Don't we all? Right.
Maybe it's just a residual of being raised as an only child. I was kind of left to my own devices. I was thinking, those of us who, attend Unity, at the end, what's often said is namaste. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, it said, do we really understand what namaste means? Are we just parroting that to understand that, the God in me recognizes the God in you, irrespective of what mask may be displayed, and i.e. behavior, that I'm looking at you as God in you with love and with understanding. And I think sometimes I think that loving someone means that I necessarily have to be in a relationship with them. And that's not the case. Or if there has been maybe, I don't know, maybe a breach in our relationship, there's reconciliation, perhaps, but not always. But just to be loving someone just as they are, where they're at, with no sort of extra by me, as opposed to what I think they should be, how they should act, whatever, but just loving them, and that's it. There's no comma to that. It's just a period.
I think you're defining or expressing what we sometimes refer to as unconditional love, which is what Paula's quote kind of combined with. And really, most people would say that there's love has to be unconditional. I mean, we use the term conditional love. I will love you if, and I will love you because, but that's not love. The only kind, and so the whole concept has gotten so corrupted over the years, that I love my dog, I love my stereo, I love my new car, and I love you. Which is fine, but they're all terribly different from one another. The only kind of love is the love that is totally inclusive of everyone and everything. A teacher friend of mine talks about Earth, planet Earth, being a classroom, and that there are any number of classrooms for spiritual seekers like ourselves. And the primary lesson of classroom Earth is unconditional love. so that each one of us is being asked to hold everyone and everything in unconditional love. And when we've accomplished that, then it's time to move on to another classroom. But that's our job right now, to hold everyone and everything in the light of unconditional love, and certainly including ourselves.
So Jerry,
mm-hmm.
how, like in this quote, that quote that I gave you, could we truly come to a point of under being able to feel compassion, let's say for Hitler, let's say the big one, understand him, what drove him to be like he was, something drove him to be that point of whatever it was, great insecurity, great whatever. Can we understand him and feel compassion where we felt that it was so real, we truly loved him, loved the truth of the is that loving the real truth of who he is, like he is created from the same intelligence all of us are,
right?
And hold that particular image.
Yes.
Then, and not get twisted into the physical ego image that he brought forth. And also that image he brought forth, the other lesson is seeing that many of those qualities, maybe not to the degree of Hitler, but they're within us in order to see them.
Mm-hmm. As we've said so often, if I see it out there, it's going on in here.
Yes.
Okay.
And that can maybe help me start to feel some compassion towards this man.
Can you imagine the pain that he's going through?
Yeah.
Maybe not consciously.
I can't, but
I can't either. Beyond me.
Can I say, this has kind of been in my crawl. And I certainly understand. I understand. But I just want to just ask everyone, what if I never understand? What if I never understand? Maybe, what if I never get that understanding?
Eventually we will, Jim.
I mean, can I just love that person and I never understand? In other words, it sounds like I need to get an understanding as to why they did this or so.
No, it's not an understanding in my head. It's not a factual understanding.
Okay.
It's an understanding of the heart.
Okay. Okay.
Understanding in the heart.
That's good.
And the other piece, or I wouldn't say another piece to this, but part of this whole picture is that the tapestry, if you want to use that metaphor, the tapestry of life is so huge that it's not limited to one little thread here and one little thread over there, right? And the interaction of each thread, including, think of all the thousands of people you have met, the thousands of people you have touched, thousands of people who have touched you, are all part of this gigantic, the Hindus would call it karmic, but it's far beyond that as well. But this gigantic tapestry of life that goes, you know, that goes even beyond this lifetime. How can I possibly begin to understand that with my limited mind? I can't. It's too big. But I can know it. I can know the truth of it. I can know the truth beyond appearances. I can know the truth of who you are beyond what I think, beyond what I sense, beyond what I feel, beyond what I see, if I am willing to. See, that wonderful quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, kind of that Paula shared with us, presumes that I am willing to see you differently. That I am willing to understand, not with my head, but I am willing to understand with my heart what has been behind this seemingly horrible things that you've done. To let me see beyond that, behind that, in front of that, beyond what my mind might say, beyond what my mind might think. But I have to be willing to allow that to come through. See, I could twist that around and say, well, the only way I'm going to love you is by understanding where you're coming from. That's my head talking. It's not about my head. It's understanding with my heart, with my open, with my soul, with my spirit, with the essence of who I am.
Barry.
Yeah.
Just in everybody sharing, something keeps coming to my mind that says, I can only paint what I see. That's all I can paint, what I see. And when you speak of this gigantic tapestry, I can't even comprehend. I can't paint that. I can't see that. It's beyond me. I can only paint what I can see.
We're painting our one little piece of the tapestry that we're aware of.
Okay.
How did Jackson Brown put it? To fill in the missing colors of each other's paint by number dreams.
Okay.
Isn't that a great line?
And it comes together.
To fill in the missing colors of each other's paint by number dreams. Kind of defining one of the ways we can look at our purpose in life. One of the purpose of relationships. To fill in the missing colors of each other's paint by number dreams. When I first heard that, that went right in my heart.
Maybe one day those colors will come together.
Yeah, like a rainbow.
Like a rainbow.
And like a rainbow, you know, there's the edge of blue and yellow, and the edges kind of blend together. There's no, you don't say, the red's really defined that way. It bleeds into the other color, and then the other color, and the other color, and the other color. There's nothing terrible, horribly, or beautifully distinct about each one. They all kind of blend together. To fill in the missing colors of each other's paint by number dreams. Down at the bottom of page 131. And the acclimation to the high vibration that you have come to commands you to interface with the manifest world for the purpose of recognition or recognizing the divine that you now know is there. Exactly what Paul was talking about. Being open to recognizing you for the truth of who you are. I don't do that. You are not seeking the divine. You are not looking for it under which rock in each book that you may read. You are knowing it. God, here's the key. You are knowing it in the sunset, in the ocean, in the body you hold, in what you see before you, in the Picasso painting, in the Beethoven concerto, in the flower that's growing through the crack in the sidewalk. Through the annoying person who's sitting next to me in the movies. And the claim you make upon what you see, I know who you are in truth. I know what you are in truth. I know how you serve in truth, is the reclamation of the divine that is always there. You have always been a divine child of God. There's nothing that has taken that away from you. I just didn't see it. Oh, that's who you are. Close with a little story here before we meditate. Reminds me of Course in Miracles talks about something called special relationships. And essentially says that's a special relationship is a head trip, not the truth. And I can remember when I first heard that. I said, that's a lot of garbage. I mean, I have a special relationship with Margot. I have a special relationship with my granddaughters. I have a special relationship with my grandson. And I started making a list of all of the special relationships I have. And I had this image, which happened about, well, fairly long time ago. We only had one grandchild at the time, Michaela, our first grandchild. And we were outside in Chicago during the winter time. And I was carrying her. And she had one of those sort of a combination coat and sleeping bag you put little babies in. So she was nice and warm. And I was holding her very close to my chest. And I was loving it because I could feel this heart vibration coming right in me. You know, it was warming me up. And her parents would say, well, do you want somebody else to carry? No, I don't want. I was getting tired, but I wanted to carry her anyway. And along with that image was this, best I can say, this prayerful voice within me. It said, now, do you recall how much you loved your little granddaughter at that moment? And I said, yes. Well, the voice said, that's how you're being asked to love everybody. I went, oh, that's how you're being asked to love everybody. So instead of making that into a special relationship, it turned into a teaching God moment of saying, remember how much you loved her at that particular moment, how much love you were open to, how much love was coming to you, how much love was flowing through you. That's how you're being asked to love everybody. I went, oh.
Wow.
Let's take a couple of minutes and you can put your stuff down. Wow. Wow. Get comfortable. Close your eyes. And allow yourself to become aware of somebody in your life you love deeply and who loves you in return. And be in that presence for a moment, breathing it into your being, softening you, stretching you. Touching every cell and fiber of your being, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. Almost like you can suck it up with a sponge, or like you're the sponge taking that in. And it comes to a point where it's difficult to tell the difference between giving and receiving. It's difficult to tell the difference between you and the lover or the loved one. And you gently stay there for a moment. And you begin to realize this is how I am being asked to respond to everyone in my life. With this same love, without conditions and without limits. and allow yourself to be embraced by this moment of love, of peace, of truth. When you're ready to, you can stretch a bit and open your eyes, keeping that with you. I feel moved to share this moment with you. Because what we're talking about here is we're talking about experience, not just a memory, not just a thought, not just an idea. But I recalled an experience, and when I did, my heart opened. I felt it, could feel it all the way through my being. It was when my grandson, Finn, he was probably about 4 or 5 years old. And I forget what we were doing. We were probably watching something on TV. And he looked at me and he said, "You're my best friend." Priceless. So thank you all for being my friend, being my neighbor.
Thank you. Let me see.
Thank
you, Jerry. You're a good friend.
Have a great
and
week,
all
guys.
Of you, you all feel so dear to me.
Thank you, Paula.
Thank you, Paula.
Absolutely.
Thank you all, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jerry.
See you guys.
Thank you, Jerry.
Bye.
Have a great night.
Thank you. Have a good party, Gregory.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Yeah. Enjoy your sweater.